Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:04 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is August 29th. I thought we'd kick off with the Dutch QTT natural gas contract. It was down heavily today. So there's a good reason for that. We're approaching the physical limits of just how much various countries in Europe can store. So we've had indiscriminate buying to get it up to this level. And then there have been news headlines that have been filling in behind this price to the effect that there's going to be an inevitable energy crisis within Europe. And I don't want for a moment to trivialize the risk, but the reality is that Europe has been buying indiscriminately to fill up their reserves. Now, those reserves aren't going to be able to fill the gap, but they'll certainly lessen the blow from the shutting down of Russian supply. And the price has been going up on the assumption that Europe was going to experience a profound energy crisis. So instead of it being a profound crisis, it might just be a bad one. And that basically suggests that we're approaching the end of the period of indiscriminate buying because we're approaching the physical limits of just how much gas they can store. And if you've got nowhere to put it, you can't buy any more of it. So that's quite, I think that's pretty obvious. So we should see a lot more volatility in pricing, both up and down. And today's downward dynamic is the first real significant sign of exhaustion in terms of demand. So then let's just look at US natural gas, because it spent a good part of today up in a reasonably dynamic manner. But if Europe is buying less or is looking like it's going to buy less or has nowhere to put it for a while at least, then the argument for natural gas in the US being able to sustain a move up through $10 looks to be less convincing. Then I've been thinking about the natural gas complex. And I found this chart and I thought it was really quite interesting. It was actually on Nutrien, the fertilizer company's quarterly report. And what it helps to highlight, and it's something that I've been trying to find for a while now, is how do we compare Henry Hub with European gas or with bituminous coal in China, and then rebalancing it to dollars and in the same units of scale as well, MMBTU. So this really helps to highlight just how much European natural gas has gone up already. And of course, what we're starting to see is demand destruction. So aluminium plants are shutting down, zinc plants are shutting down, and fertilizer manufacturers are shutting down. So what that's also helping to do is to support the outlook for fertilizer prices. So Nutrien has rebounded in a very emphatic fashion. It's up 30% in just a matter of weeks. And Mosaic has got a very similar pattern bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. So what was also, I thought, relevant today is wheat prices are starting to rebound. Now, that's despite the fact that it's looking like the Australian crop is going to be particularly strong. But because of the drought and then rains in the US Midwest, the harvest isn't looking particularly healthy. So the price was up today and looks to be on the cusp of completing a 1 month base formation. Corn prices are also continuing to push higher from here. Now that's certainly aided by continued strength in oil prices. And Brent crude pushed up nearly $4 in here today. Now there's increasing speculation that there's anywhere from between 60 and 70 up to as many as 90 million barrels ready to be released onto the market from Iran's sanctioned reserves that are just sitting in containers around the Asian region and domestically. But there isn't any real enthusiasm that's going to happen soon. It might be the negotiations are going to push well into September, and then potentially, even if the contentious issue of reinvigorating the Iran nuclear deal actually goes through, then it might be another 6 months before we start to see that supply actually hitting the market. So that's helping to support prices. But more importantly, this is looking like a failed downside break. We can simply look at this on a weekly chart, and it clearly pops up that we had the break below $100. It didn't spend very much time below there, and now it's pushing back up into the overhead trading range. So this is looking like a more convincing rebound than we've seen over the course of the last month. Now, of course, we've had a ranging environment for the last 6 months, and that is indicative of supply and demand coming back into balance. And when we think about, I mean, I saw an article today saying that there's upwards of $700 billion has been committed in the form of state supports for oil companies around the world. But there's no evidence that there's a strong drilling program underway. If we look at the OSX index, we have an upward bias in the trading over the last 3 years, but it's certainly got a lot of convincing to do. We're back in the region of the 1,000 and 200-day moving averages. The prices have been rebounding over the last 2 months, but it's a very choppy pattern overall. And I think it's worth highlighting that most of the offshore drilling companies went bust and then have been relisted. This is a Diamond Offshore Drilling, and it IPO'd again in March of last year, excuse me, of this year, and immediately collapsed. So it's starting to look a little bit better now. And Seadrill is another one that went bust, relisted, then went bust again, and now has relisted once more. And it's also attempting to steady here. So these companies have been through extraordinary duress. And interestingly enough, Rigzone, not Rigzone, excuse me, Rig, which is Transocean, survived without going bust, even though they were the ones that were probably the real reason why interest in offshore drilling evaporated because of the Macondo accident. But the price here is steadying from the lower side of this range that's been forming now for the last 18 months. And until we start to see some serious money being put back to work in the oil drilling sector, well, then OPEC is going to continue to have control. So Petróleo Brasileiro is pushing back up through the $15 level. Now, we've had quite a bit of volatility over the last few months, and a good part of the reason for that is because of political volatility in Brazil and the threat of windfall taxes. But so far, the company's been able to fend those off, and it still has a yield in the region of 33%. So this is rather extraordinary. You don't have to get very many coupons before or the dividends before you've made your initial investment back. And then we have the fact that Brazil also has among the highest interest rates in the world, and that is acting as a support for the real. And the real was also in positive territory in here today. What was also, I think, interesting is that with European natural gas prices coming off a little, and members of the ECB Governing Council starting to talk about raising interest rates in an aggressive manner, the euro steadied, and it's back testing parity with the dollar. Now, you can clearly see over the last 5 days there's been quite a bit of intraday trading without the price moving very much by the close. So there's certainly a reticence to bet on a significant decline through parity. But Europe is in a difficult situation. It's inevitable there's going to be a recession, and that recession might be quite deep because of the pressures from the energy sector. So they're precluded from raising rates aggressively. But if they do raise rates aggressively, they run the real risk of getting control of inflation, but then overshooting and going into a really significant contraction. So obviously, then, if they raise rates faster than anticipated, that would certainly help to put some stability under the euro. And a stronger currency would be instrumental in trying to keep inflationary pressures under control, because the sharp deterioration of the currency over the last 12 months, falling by over 20%, is certainly something that has contributed to the big rise in inflation in Europe, and not least because oil prices have been rising. But one thing that we also have clear evidence of is any day that the dollar eases, gold rallies. And it was down over $10 in initial trading and is closing out the day pretty close to unchanged. So if the euro can rebound further from here, then that would imply dollar weakness and therefore gold strength. And that would enhance the scope, at least, that we have a higher reaction low. However, I'd be cautious about predicting that we're going to have an imminent rebound back to the peaks from March, simply because bond yields continue to rise. And what I think we had evidence of on Friday was a Fed call that everyone has been attuned to the reality of the Fed put over the course of years. Every time we've pulled back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average, we've had clear, sustained evidence of the Federal Reserve lowering interest rates, making liquidity available, and supporting prices. And we got back to that level in June of this year. The market bounced, but the Federal Reserve did not provide any assistance. And then last week, we had a retest of the 200-day moving average. A lot of enthusiasm in the markets that we're going to have a significant rebound, potentially back to new all-time highs, the beginning of a new bull market. And Jay Powell basically made it his mission on Friday to kill off that idea, that they're going to continue raising rates and they're going to have higher rates for longer until they get this inflation problem under control. They only have two mandates. One is full employment and the second is price stability. They have full employment, they don't have price stability, therefore they don't have any choice. Based upon their mandate, they have to attack price stability. And that implies higher rates and less liquidity. So money supply growth has contracted, the size of the Fed's balance sheet is going to contract, and the pace of that contraction will accelerate in September, and they will continue to raise interest rates. And that is going to weigh on stocks. But the stock market was unchanged in here today. Investors are still not willing to give that conclusion the benefit of the doubt. But one thing that I think helps to really ram that home is that financial conditions are often assumed to be more about easy monetary conditions than anything else. But one thing we've plenty of evidence of is that financial conditions are also very sharply influenced by stock prices. And we've seen plenty of times over the years where the Federal Reserve has also been sensitive to stock prices. That was most acutely clear at the end of 2018. We had a 20% pullback, and the plunge protection team came in and supported prices. Within 6 months, interest rates were coming back down, and we had the end of quantitative tightening. We're not seeing that yet. There's no real evidence of support. So, with liquidity getting sucked out of the market, and leveraged loans are potentially something that needs to be paid attention to. And we should pay attention to the fact that there's an extraordinary quantity of them outstanding. And we had a good sized rebound over the course of the last 2 months, and now it's encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, and this is a total return index. So I believe there's upwards of 14 trillion in leverage loans, and the issuing these kinds of loans made absolute perfect sense in a permanently low interest rate environment where liquidity was abundantly available. But that's not nearly as compelling an argument when interest rates are rising and liquidity is contracting. So there is quite clearly a problem evolving in this sector, but it's most clearly going to be affected by private equity companies, because that's where the issuance has come from. So one thing that we can always look at in a secular bull market is, where's the money coming from to support speculation? And in this last bull market, the transmission mechanism from abundant liquidity being created by central banks and how it found its way into public markets has been through private equity spending, through companies being able to borrow at exceptionally low rates, and private lenders filling the shoes of public lenders that were curtailed by regulation. And then those private lenders had to raise their funds somewhere. So leveraged loans were one of those answers. So we've definitely seen a contraction, a rebound, and now it's rolling over. Now, with bond yields continuing to push higher, we can also anticipate that high yield spreads will also continue to rebound from the 450 basis point level, and it was in positive territory again over, excuse me, the last couple of days. So this is still an uptrend, even though we've had a somewhat deeper pullback. And it's pushing back up towards this psychological 500 basis point level. The uptrend alone, with the succession of higher reaction lows, is enough to be cautious about the outlook for high yield debt. And this is just another sign of tightening liquidity overall. So there's nothing has happened to question the conclusion that we are heading towards recessions for the vast majority of global markets. But we're certainly getting a lot of trading around the idea and a willingness by investors to think that central banks aren't going to let it get that bad and that interest rates will come down well before it becomes seriously problematic. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.